Hello and welcome to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. And a big thanks to everyone listening. This is the second episode, and before we get started, I just wanted to mention a few things. First off, really sorry for the delay in the episode. We had a large storm that knocked out power for 800,000 people in my area. It was quite intense. So sorry for the delay. We're back and we're back up. So if you're on Facebook, click the Like the Show button at the top of the website and spread the word about the show and tell your friends. The more people listen, the more subscribers we get, the more likes, the more popular show gets, we're going to be able to move forward with this and create a Whence Came You Android app, which will provide users with a direct link to all the episodes and have exclusive content. It's going to be really cool. Keep your eye open for some relevant advertisements that are going to be on the website. Don't click them if they're not relevant to you, but if there's something interesting, go ahead and click on them. What that does is it gives our website a little kickback. It's going to help keep the lights on, help keep bringing you really cool content about becoming a Freemason. Or maybe you're a Mason, maybe you just you like hearing really cool new or really old research papers. We have an archive of things that we're going to bring you. So just keep all that in mind and spread the word about the show. And so we'll get right into the show. Some of you may have found us on Facebook over the weekend. We did a Facebook ad. The title was How to Become a Freemason. And I wanted to let men who are interested know what to do and how to do it if you really are interested. So the first thing, you should know that there's a Grand Lodge in each state of the United States, which governs each lodge within a state. And most Grand Lodges have a website which you can look up information about becoming a Mason and so forth. And I hope to shed a little more light than just that on this subject. Our motto for the longest time has been to be one, ask one. And you probably have seen that on lapel pins and other things. But in these technological times, we find it necessary to adapt. If you don't know any Freemasons to ask, you can always just Google your Grand Lodge by simply typing your state and the words Grand Lodge or Grand Lodge AFNAM, which stands for Ancient Free and Accepted Masons. Once you go to the website and you check out some things, find a link, there will be one, where you can request information. They will ask for a phone number and an address, most likely, and they will call you. What ends up happening is the Grand Lodge of your state will most likely forward the information to a local lodge close to the address that you provided them, and they'll call you, and it will most likely be the secretary, although it could be anybody. They're not going to ask you for money or anything like that. It's kind of just a courtesy call for you and for the lodge, so that they kind of get a feel for who you are before they meet you. Usually what ends up happening is they will ask you to come down on a fellowship night to sit and talk or share a meal, and I really recommend going. Don't be in a little personal bubble. Don't be scared to go. Just be relaxed and just know that everybody who is a Mason today has gone through something so similar, if not exactly the same thing as you, and they've done this from the beginning. After the meal, you'll talk, you'll ask questions, they'll ask you questions, and if you really feel that you wanted to do it, ask for a petition to join. Some lodges will just give you a petition while others may wait for you to ask for one. And just fill the petition out and ask the men around and in the lodge to sign your petition. Most lodges need 3 signers. I needed 3 signers for my petition, and I did that in the one night that I met a bunch of them, and it was really, really neat to hear these guys talk about Masonry and what it's done for them, and it is just a really cool thing. And so after you get these signatures, what happens next? Well, there's a little bit of a waiting game, and I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, in this day and age, you really want it to happen now. You just want it now, because that's the way it is now. But becoming a Mason is not instant. In fact, it could take 3 weeks before you hear back about your petition. So what ends up happening is your petition will go and it will be read at a business meeting from your lodge. And that business meeting may happen once a month, or sometimes they happen every 2 weeks. For me, my lodge was one time a month they have a business meeting. And I happened to put my petition in right after a business meeting, so I went a month before I got a phone call. Now, a month seems like a long time, but it really isn't. What it's doing is it's giving everybody enough time, because what happens is the worshipful master of the lodge will ask for volunteers to do an investigation after your petition is read. And an investigation is just that. It's an investigation into your character and who you really are. They will either come to you, or you can come down to the lodge. Sometimes they will ask. And it is usually a committee of three gentlemen. And they'll come to your house if you want. And they will want to talk with your wife and your family. It's a kind of an interview. And that is a little off-putting to some folks, but I'll tell you, it's nothing uncomfortable. They will ask you these big five questions, and those questions, and I don't tell you this so that you can formulate an answer. I tell you this because these questions are similar, and they won't always ask these questions, but they're very similar, and you should just know these answers and have answers ready for them, because they're looking for very specific things. And those questions are usually, can you make the meetings? Why do you want to become a Mason? Is your wife and family okay with it? Is it going to be a financial burden on you or your family? And do you believe in a higher being? And the first question is important because you will need to study some literature and memorize it. And being at the meetings gives you a mentor. There will be mentors there that can help you out, to help you study. A lot of this is not written down. It's mouth to ear. So being at the meeting is very important. Secondly, that question is answered by you. And that is, why do you want to become a Mason? And there's no wrong answer here unless you say something like, I really want to, I was really into those National Treasure movies, or something goofy like that. They might give you a look. But the third question is also important, and it's because they're going to ask your wife if she's okay with you becoming a Mason. And if she says no, then the lodge says no. Nothing ever comes between you and your family. And the lodge will support that until the end. Family first, always. The financial burden aspect is important because there is, in most lodges, a petition fee, which is refunded to you if you're not elected to receive the degrees. But there's the petition fee, and there's a fee, usually, per degree, and there's a yearly dues amount. And these are not expensive. Don't freak out. We're not talking huge money. We're talking about very small money, and it's nothing to worry about. And the last question is necessary: do you believe in a higher being? Because you have to end up swearing to something higher than yourself. So those are your questions, and that's the first part of the how to become a Mason part of this series. Further information we're going to provide on the next few episodes. So subscribe, and we'll have more information for you then. And So we'll bring you to a new segment here on the show. Now, this new section is kind of impromptu. As you all know, we just had the last shuttle mission, and it just took place last week, and it got me thinking about astronauts. Were there any astronauts that were Freemasons? Well, the answer is yes. To name a few, we had Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, Gordon Cooper, John Glenn, James Webb. Pretty amazing. And this is going to lead us into our first spotlight on famous Freemasons. So I was researching it a bit, and I found that Buzz Aldrin was a member of a lodge in Texas. And the following is an excerpt from the Sea of Tranquility Lodge, number 2000 in Texas. On July 20th, 1969, two American astronauts landed on the moon of the planet Earth in an area known as Mare Tranquillitatis, or Sea of Tranquility. One of those brave men was Brother Edwin Eugene Buzz Aldrin, Jr., a member of Clear Lake Lodge, number 1417 AFNAM, Seabrook, Texas. Brother Aldrin carried with him a special deputation of then Grandmaster J. Guy Smith, constituting and appointing Brother Aldrin as special deputy of the Grandmaster, granting unto him full power in the premises to represent the Grandmaster as such and authorize him to claim Masonic territorial jurisdiction for the most worshipful Grand Lodge of Texas, ancient free and accepted Masons, on the moon, and directed that he make due return of his acts. Brother Aldrin certified that that special deputation was carried by him to the moon on July 20th, 1969. And I really enjoyed reading their tagline on the website, which said, "Truth, Relief, and Brotherly Love on an Interplanetary Scale." And if you want to see more information on this, you can visit http://tl2k.org, and that'll take you to the Tranquility Lodge 2000, number 2000 website. Really, really cool stuff. I'd like to discuss a little something this week, and post your replies on the website. And again, if you have anything that you want to ask, go ahead and write those in the comments section of the website. But for this, really, looking for a little bit of a conversation, because I'd like to know your thoughts. This has been on my mind for a bit. Fellowship that is not always in the lodge. And my lodge has recently started to make a real effort in having fellowship outside the lodge. We recently had a fishing trip, a baseball game, and last year we went to our local Oktoberfest as a group. And the turnout has been moderate. I just wish more people would come out. Perhaps people are a little too busy in the stressful times, or maybe they just feel like they're wrapped up in their own little personal bubble. They seem to get a little uncomfortable around people they don't know. They seem to do anything it takes to be as non-confrontational as possible, even if it's a good confrontation. A good example, you know, is texting. Have you ever gotten like a text that was important? But maybe that should have been a phone call. You know, so these times, nobody wants to get personal with anybody else. A good example, another one, is do you know your neighbors? I mean, I lived in a house for about 10 years, and I didn't know any of them. Now I move into another house here, and I know all my neighbors. In fact, the other day, my wife loaned out to our neighbor a 2-pound pack of ground beef because the market was closed. He was took back a bit, but he took it, and the next day, he brought us a replacement to 2 pounds of ground beef. Just one of those neighborly things. So fellowship is important, and let me know what your thoughts are on that, and not just within the lodge. So that's loosely going to tie us into this week's paper, which was entitled A Mason's Duty, which is a paper that was prepared for a Lockern Lodge on February 13th, 1969 by C.D. Holmes. So without further ado, here's our paper for the week. A Mason's Duty by C.D. Holmes. The subject, which I wish to talk on tonight regards the relation of a Mason's duty and his happiness. I think one of today's greatest problems has to be complacency. The greatest reason for so much distress and sorrow is surely because mankind has become too self-satisfied with the way things are. In our affluent society, we have become satisfied with our thought. We have become satisfied with our deeds. We have become satisfied with our way of living. We have in the world today tremendous servants of leisure that our forefathers would never have dreamed possible. It is possible to travel to any place on the globe in just a few short hours. We can watch events happen halfway around the world by the aid of television. All we need to do is flick a switch, and we can be in the midst of tomorrow's history, watching it as it happens. 10 years ago, who would have thought that we would be watching our old Earth on television screens, a scene from the moon? We think nothing of travel. To instance, just a couple of hours ago, I was eating my supper, and now, this scant time later, I am some 50-odd miles away enjoying the friendship of this meeting. Not a stupendous thing, but unthought of a few years ago. We can do more things and accomplish more with less effort than at any other time in recorded history. Take, for instance, our late, and I hope that we can now use the past tense, cold spell. Many, many records for prolonged cold have been tumbled, and yet, did we really experience anything more than mild inconvenience or discomfort? In order to make our homes a little more comfortable, all we had to do in most areas was turn up the thermostat. Contrast this with living memory of everyone in this room, when a cold spell, only half as severe, meant frozen water mains, frozen water pipes, and untold grief and inconvenience. Yes, brethren, we have it good, a good deal better now than at any other time in history, so why should it be that we have more distress? Why do we have hatred and suspicion at every hand? Why do we have more sorrow, grief, and problems of every kind surrounding us as never before? With all our luxury, you would think that happiness would be everywhere, and yet we have an access to better, happier way of life if we only wish to do something about it. I believe that we as Masons have within our power the ability to change the course of greed, hate, and selfishness, which we seem to be treading, to one of love, prosperity, and peace. If all Masons throughout the world would practice outside of the lodge that which we are taught in it, if we were the philosophies and teachings of our craft, truly this would take on new meaning for everyone. It has been said that when the world is at its worst, then Masonry should be at its best. Mediocrity in Masonry will never do anything toward making this world a better place to live in, but I submit, brethren, that if each and every one of us stood up to be counted, if we would turn our backs on that which is fraudulent, that which is cheap, yes, that which goes beyond the circumference of the circle in any part of our lives, and said, I believe that that is wrong, or I believe that that is right, and stick with our beliefs throughout all opposition, then we would be well on our way to raising our Masonic edifices to the real and meaningful, noble edifices of speculative Masons, and thus be doing so, we will become the more efficient operative Masons. Surely this is what we set out to do when we take our 3 degrees in the lodge. Now I think that when we receive our Master Mason's aprons and our certificates, all we have really received is the pass to go on and upward in learning and acting. I think that we should look for more than the obvious in our ritual. For instance, let us ponder the Master's query of the Senior Warden. What induced you to become a Master Mason? Rather than the obvious answer, let us look at another answer, and in another way. And what is his answer? Could this not mean, or rather be extended to mean, that I wish to learn the goals of a Master Mason, and once I have learned these goals, that I might step out and project myself and my thoughts beyond this mediocrity of that which is right at hand, and get into deeper fields by working and studying at these foreign lands, or unknown fields, work in these fields and receive the wages, or the product of this learning, and by receiving these, now being able to better support myself and my family. The building of a better moral base from which to branch out and hold up ourselves and those dependent on us. And of course, this can be made much wider than our own particular families. This is the whole universe to which we are exposed, that becomes dependent. No man is an island unto himself. We are all interdependent. And so each person we meet or have any dealings with whatsoever becomes, to a certain extent, dependent on us for something. And conversely, we are dependent on them for something. How we discharge our responsibility to this dependency is, of course, up to each one of us individually. And if we take our responsibilities as a master mason seriously, we will learn to support those dependent on us and contribute more to their relief. Again, we are inclined to think of this as a temporal sense. And of course, I believe that we should give monetary to help these unfortunates, but should we not think more of our moral support through visitation? Sometimes the widows and orphans are much better off money-wise by being such than if they weren't widowed or orphaned. Surely the need is much deeper than temporal. I would say that distressed Brother Master Masons are much more likely to be those who have lost the word or key to life. Those who, somewhere along the line, have found no drawings on their trestle boards and are therefore temporarily, and I say temporarily because I believe that until such time as life passed from the body of a mason, any stoppage or interruption in his labor for the craft is temporary. Outside the craft, we all get the feeling at one time or another that our efforts are wasted. We think, what's the use? We try and do which is right and honest, but it seems that our efforts are lost. Again, this is when we find that we are without drawings on our trestle boards. Here is where our outstretched hand of a brother can pick us up and help us to get back on track. Could it be that the lack of concern on our part is something that we said, or more importantly, something we did or did not do that caused this brother to falter and to feel that our craft just isn't an empty thing after all? Our duties are to see that we do not let down and cause our brothers or any person at all to go astray because of us. I feel that we miss a very great opportunity. Indeed, we are derelicted of our duties if we do not take a newly raised Master Mason and nurture and care for them early on in their Masonic life and get them desirous of traveling in those foreign countries and earning those wages. This early time in the life of any Mason is the most critical, and I would hazard a guess that a very great percentage of the people that we lose or find just to be lukewarm are that way because we did not exercise our responsibility to our newly raised brother and bring him on to be active in the craft. It is so very easy to stop after taking the third degree and sit idly watching what is going on around, and I agree that there are a mighty few who will step up and say to the master, I want something to do, I want a little responsibility. On the contrary, he is much more likely to be scared stiff to do anything, like giving a lecture or partake in degree work, if for no other reason that he feels inadequate. However, with a little encouragement and the help and praise for efforts expended, we will have one more Master Mason building his temple, of which we learn in the lecture on the northeast corner. Yes, it is our duty to influence our environment, not to reflect it, and if we are not careful, we will do just the opposite. Now for a short discourse on happiness. You will remember the senior deacon taking the candidate up the stairs, and he explains, duty and happiness go together. Brethren, I would submit to you that real happiness comes only from the proper discharge of our duties and obligations to God, our neighbors, and ourselves. And so, while there are great and weighty obligations and responsibilities in being a true Master Mason, our active discharge of these duties are what gives us true happiness. Let us be happy ourselves and endeavor to promote the happiness of others. This we can do by being true to our teachings and philosophies. not just because Lodge is a nice place to come each month, but because we wish to build ourselves up morally and spiritually, and help our brethren do the same, and by doing discharge our obligations to each other as Master Masons. I am convinced that if we each make up our minds to be careful to see that our temples contain no cracks of cheating and wrongdoing, if we endeavor with the help of the Grand Architect of the Universe, for without his help, all our efforts are vain doings, we strive to diligent in the duties of our respective callings. If we are active in our benevolence to all mankind, if we are willing to spend ourselves in doing something beyond ourselves, that which we know is right, then we as Masons will indeed help to usher in a great new day of love, forbearance, and peace, and thus find that happiness which we all look for. Dated and prepared for Lockhern Lodge, February 13th, 1969. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Whence Came You. Remember to click the Like the Show button on the website, and I look forward to reading those comments for this week's show. Feel free to ask any questions, and I'll answer them in the podcast. I want to mention that we are on iTunes, and you can find us by typing in Whence Came You in the iTunes Store search bar, or click the Download in iTunes button on the website, and it'll take you to the iTunes Store, where you can subscribe or download episodes as you like. Next week, we'll continue the series on how to become a Mason, as well as another segment on a famous Freemason and a short Masonic research paper. Remember, you can email the show at wcypodcast@gmail.com. Until then, be well, and I'll talk to you all next week. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.